a matter of front and hand, it will be objective. We're going to find out what I know it's going to be. It's going to be covering from the 20th century on, page 19, Paul Solis. Yes. Again, at page 19, it will cover. It will depend heavily, as most of these exams do, upon the syllabus. However, it will also cover material in the handout and material I put on the board, but not in the syllabus. There's 50 lectures, sections. So there's some stuff on the board. Talk about that. So you'll be responsible for that. So if you don't have good notes, word of warning. It will be true and false, identification, or definition, briefly define words, identify stuff, and a major planning system syllabus. Any questions? Statistics is the one with the bonus. One bonus. With the listing of one each. That's all there is, one for each. Just like that. Shouldn't take you, I would guess, an hour very much to take. Maybe what you do is the time that today is not the same. The hour of the time is the same. Well, you got a couple of years on
what you're going to do.
And then, hour of the time. Actually, I've graded it. I've given Alan May 12. Because he's got talked about it a lot of words. He never had my opinion. He apologized for the paper. I went back and looked at it. Now down to
food.
If I were you, I'd have to talk about it again. Well, I haven't said it yet. Wrong about this stuff. Usually, before I grade people, I don't know how you're going to put a stiff around
you. What about
that? I
therefore we will not consider only a naturalistic explanation.
trust the debt and try to get an actual explanation for people on that. It doesn't work. What's the problem of logic in that? Is it true that if there's a supernatural explanation for origins, that it would outcome the nomination? That's true. I mean, I'm outside the realm of science, but it's working out. That's true. Yeah, that's true. Okay, that's the first part of this course. Well, then what about the logic of saying, well, since it's a proof of science, then we will not consider it supernatural. But if you gave a sense, you say we do not consider it. Well, is there anything wrong with that? Is there anything wrong with a book? I'm about to say again. Is there anything wrong with a book saying, an author saying,
I am going to look at only at the possible, I'm only going to look at the explanation of origins that could possibly be dealt with in terms of science. I'm going to look at those. That's fine. That's a good one. I'm going to have a very narrow perspective on it. Okay. That's what is illegitimate and where this whole business becomes scientific. Is when the author says or implies that somehow his explanation is the only, or his explanation or the kind of explanation that he offers is the only possible explanation, and therefore the supernatural is ruled out. You cannot rule out that explanation. That is, in the words this way, if they read a book on the physics, biology, and going in, the author says, we're not going to consider creation. Then coming out at the end, his conclusion, if his conclusion is not creationism, it simply isn't creation. It is not significant that his conclusion is not embraced by the end. It is simply not significant. It is meaningless. And there's where the pride is in the art. Because the breakdown of logical thinking, the textbook will rule out supernatural going in, and then attach some significance to the absence of the supernatural coming out. And it's just a logical fallacy. And if you take a narrow perspective can, which is legitimate, you want to write from a narrow perspective, but you have to admit, here's what scientism does not recognize, or not think you've got to see it. I have found that many evolutionists, for example, are not very well educated. They do not have a liberal education. They have a very parochial education, very narrow education. They talk about biology and microbial families, but they take one inch to the right of the left of biology, and they get stupid, you know, right? That's a very subtle thing. And, what's my train of thought? Where you have a breakdown, where scientism is true, is where this author is writing from this narrow perspective that does not admit or does not recognize that a narrow perspective very often will shield you from the truth. That is the danger of working from a narrow perspective. It will shield you from the truth. I'll give you an example, an analogy, okay? Let's say you got a person who's acting who's a sexual pervert and a serial murderer and acts crazy in the bed bug. You kind of figure out what's wrong with the guy. Well, I would say if a guy acts like that, he hears voices and has a similar sentence, I would say that a possibility is he's demon possessed. It doesn't mean he's demon possessed, but that's a possibility. Why? Because demon possession exists, it often manifests itself just that way, although often a person will act that way and not be demon possessed. So I'm trying to find out what's wrong with the guy. If a person goes to examine the guy, he's a modern Freudian, and he says, I do not recognize the existence of
going to look for purely naturalistic psychological explanation, he may come up with one. It may not be the right one. Truth may be, well, maybe demons were bad. So his narrow perspective has shielded him from the truth. That is, a narrow perspective can guarantee that you're not come up with the truth. You understand? That's true of anything. A narrow perspective will guarantee that you will not come up with a true conclusion. Not come up with a conclusion. And you might come up with a conclusion, listen to me. But it is one thing to come up with a conclusion and a study, which is the most plausible within the confines of your perspective. But that doesn't mean it's the true one. And that's what you have in evolution today. Especially with abiogenesis, chemical evolution. So an explanation which is the most plausible within the confines of a narrow perspective. It's the most plausible of two or three naturalistic explanations. But the true explanation is not naturalistic at all. I mean, that's the whole point of perspective, because the guarantee that you're not going to come up with the truth. In fact, the point is what we're doing.
But number one, scientists are concerned about creation. They kind of shield away from it because they say, well, it involves the supernatural. And I would say, so what? If the supernatural exists, see, the question, listen to me, a liberal education, in the good sense of that term, in the traditional sense that's been used in Western civilization, liberal education does not ask the question, what is scientific? A liberally educated man asks the question, what is truth? It's a very superstitious kind of mind that says, that equates those two. That the question of what is scientific, quote, and what is truth are necessarily the same question. That's pure rationalism, empiricism, positivism. But it won't work. And of course, the grand fallacy in that is, if you cannot show scientifically, the supernatural does not exist.
Since you're going to be bound by science, that's going to be your perspective. It would only hold, it could only hold if you could prove scientifically, that's going to be your only perspective, that the supernatural does not exist. And of course, that cannot be proved methodologically, nor can it be proved logically. Because it's very difficult to show what does not exist. To show that God does not exist, you have to be everywhere in the universe at the same time. Because in one place you were not as particular about exactly where God is. But it's very difficult to show.
You all understand that?
Okay, so it's not a perspective.
The second concern that scientists have about creation is that creation entails discontinuity. Now, the majority of scientists, what is continuity? That is, that everything we conceive, everything in the material world can be explained in terms of an endless, of a chain of cause and effect that goes on unbroken into the infinite past. This is the modern mind of scientists. Everything we see, the biological world, the organic world, the non-organic world, everything we see must be explained in terms of an unbroken chain or unbroken chains of cause and effect, traceable back to the infinite past. Not that we can see every link, but every link has been there, and if we had the we could go back in time or had sufficiently honed or refined methods, we could identify each link. Well, it does not insist on seeing each link, identifying it, but it posits that each link was there. And science prefers continuity. That's one of the reasons they like this. They don't like miracles. Why? Miracles are a discontinuity. Are they not? That is, now, listen to me. Miracles are a discontinuity in terms of naturalistic cause and effect. They are not a discontinuity in cause and effect.
subdivision cost and sufficient cost. Miracles do not, as some think, rebuke the concept, did not defy. Miracles do not defy cause and effect. They simply introduce a sufficient cause from the outside and let feel as it were. When Jesus fed the 5,000 with a little boy's lunch, he did not defy cause and effect. He simply introduced a sufficient cause.
Well, the times don't like that. Notice, I capitalized the word prefer. Now that shows a bias. Why? What is significant about the word prefer? Yes, why not?
Right.
Now, supposed to prefer. The scientist who conducted it, pure scientist, isn't supposed to prefer anything. He's supposed to discover it. Good science does not prefer. Once you start preferring, then everything is warped. That's like, for instance, you see this, a lot of people. In my estimation, several hundred thousand people are going to die for the simple reason that modern research on AIDS is being biased by tremendous social pressure that prefers a particular construct of AIDS. That is, there's a tremendous social preference that AIDS not be a homosexual disease. Therefore, there's tremendous pressure being brought upon the field of medicine to not treat it as a homosexual disease. And I am convinced that is going to slow down and hinder, in some way, the medical solution, if there is one, to the disease. As a result, a lot of people can die. For instance, if AIDS were treated without preference, what you would immediately do would quarantine the homosexual community and test them and let them break out of that quarantine only if it was shown they didn't have AIDS. That's what would be done to report any other disease, where cholera, diphtheria,
but you know, that's not like the part. You know, don't you have a situation here with homosexuals that because of the closet, homosexuals that will not come out and admit to that, it wouldn't be good to do it that way.
Well, but
it might help.
But you would at least isolate all known ones. For instance, that was typhoid fever. If you can see a typhoid fever was 75 to 85% of people who had it within a certain social group, that group would immediately be quarantined.
Typhoid fever does not carry with it social stigma.
That's right.
As great as social stigma, so someone might say, okay, it may be all valid college students, 70% of all valid college students have typhoid fever. But we'll volunteer to quarantine until that time because it doesn't carry a social stigma, where obviously having AIDS and being a homosexual does, right?
Well, if you had 85% of all the people that have typhoid fever in the tax county, Texas, or residents of Cactus County, Texas, they would immediately quarantine Cactus County, Texas until they got the thing under control. That's the procedure. That procedure is not being followed. Why? Because there's a tremendous preference that it not be treated. So the fact, and then that preference, and that, you see what I'm saying? That approach is going to cost hundreds of thousands of people their lives. Because
eventually, these
are going to be arrested by men containing them. It's not being contained. Will not be contained. They contain to give blood. They continue to associate freely, they continue to do all kinds of things, and so people are going to die. And frankly, kind of hungry, because I'm having a hard time working with a share of sympathy for anybody that's hemophilia actually lives in love with people. In other words, homosexuals to get another homosexual, and heterosexuals to get a prostitute. They're going to have a tough time getting sympathy out of me. They're going to get drunk, but they're going to tell me. I'm going to work it out. You know, because I was raised not to appreciate it, and your finances become miserable. But anyway,
you see the danger of preference? For instance, if you, the scientific method of diagnosing a disease that causes the yellow fever, something like that. You don't go into it and say, well, we prefer this to be the explanation because it would help us. No, they'll scientists know not to do that. You can't believe that. What they do is they try to rule out preference by through their methodology, which is good science. But, except in this case, they prefer continuity. Why? Well, that's a good question. Why? Well, you see, immediately, if you introduce discontinuity, a naturalistic discontinuity, which represents a break in a naturalistic scheme, then immediately it takes it outside the realm of science. That is, science can not analyze the turning of the water into wine. There's no science. Why? Because it doesn't mean it's not true, doesn't mean it violates cause and effect, simply takes it outside the realm of perspective. Third, well, I've already talked about the quantum revolution advancing the notion of continuity. We've talked about that today. Creation might destroy the scientific quest for knowledge. The third reason why science sort of shies away from creation. Now, what do we say about this? You see, here's what they often say. Well, if we start introducing the creator, then the quest for knowledge is going to die because everybody's just going to back off and say, well, God did it. Why did kind of like the ACLU, utter hypocrisy, who will defend the rights of criminals to the extreme, saying, well, we're really defending our own rights. By that I'm saying, for instance, a church group wants to close down a pornography shop. ACLU will argue, look, if you do this, then the next thing that's going to happen is they're going to take your Bible away from you. Which is silly. Of course. Well, in that same mentality, scientists will often say, well, if you introduce the possibility of a creator, a God who creates and a God who intervenes through miracles, immediately everybody's going to say, well, they're going to stop looking for the cause of diseases. They're going to say, well, God is punishing them, and they're going to have no grand unifying theory, and that everything's going to break down because men are just going to dismiss the quest for knowledge, considering everything other than God, which is the natural.
Thank you. I just want to know from the ACLU.
Now, the first thing I would point out about this is the creationist roots of modern science. It was not the atheistic worldview. Like I said before, what the atheists were doing, were writing crazy utopian schemes, they had been like Robert Owen. The atheists in the 17th and 18th centuries were a bunch of cuckoo birds. They were not doing anything constructive. Most of them have been probated before lunch if they were around today, as far as their social schemes. It was the theists, the creationists who created modern science. You didn't know that. Creationists did that. Their quest for identifying the order which they believe God built into the creation. So that's just historically ridiculous.
Couldn't some scientists still get with them if they, for instance, stop Calvin? Absolutely.
Yes. Or some branch of fundamentalism. But that's really not an excuse because there's such a massive body of literature that comes from creation science. It's just so clear. That is the scientist said, but we can't allow creationism because it ends the quest of knowledge. That is simply hysterical nonsense in the light of history and in the light of all the hysterical. I will point out some of the leading pioneers in science and space technology in medicine are believers. You do not find a correlation between believers and demons. That is in those fields. You we don't find the believing signs that's holding back and dragging their heels on unbelievers toward the head. Matter of fact, the unbelievers are getting into superstition because it's a concept. Okay, and here's a very important point. The failure of any scientist to distinguish between operation science and origin science. Now this is a very important point. Let's think this through together. The failure of modern scientists and many scientists to distinguish between operation science and origin science. For instance, they say, well, if you posit a creator, then that will end the quest for knowledge on origin science. On origin. Now, what is the difference, first of all, between creation, the origin science, and operation science? As I word it. Operation and origin. What is operation science?
When I see the innovation search for advanced technology, how things happen when you use it.
Yeah, how things work, right? Yeah. That is, and by the way, many modern textbooks, because of the furor over evolution and creation, because of that controversy, are sort of ignoring origin signs and sticking with operation signs, and because an evolutionist in California took care of that, and textbooks put more origin signs on. But you see, operation science is simply the examination, the observation, and in some cases, the reproduction. The reduplication of what, of how, of what is going on, how it works. Now, origin science is a different thing, different kind of thing. You see, what this book points out, I mean, yes, and what creation has been pointing out for a long time, that is a fundamental mistake to try to explain origin in terms of operation. That is, uniformitarianism holds, and scientism holds, that the principles observable in operation science are sufficient to explain origins, significantly or not. It's like saying this, that if you take the instructions on how to operate a computer, or how to read, that is how I can take instructions on the operation of the computer. Extrapolate those instructions, you know, build them. I promise you it won't, but it's a huge separate thing. And, I may not be a good analogy, but well, I can make it at the moment. And what many scientists, you see, they, in when it comes to creationism, here's the fallacy, the flaw in the thinking. They say, well, we cannot allow discontinuity in operation science, or we can have nothing to say about it. That is, We believe that bacteria causes disease, and we identify that the bacteria or the virus, or we have a virus, and we can deal with the disease, that kind of thing. And we don't stop and say, well, God causes everything to be delayed, otherwise we don't have time. That's true. And of course, Christians recognize this. And God, we call it the law of nature. God establishes a continuity. But that business doesn't apply in fundamentalism. And many scientists apply this, here's what I'm saying. Scientism and many scientists apply the same categories when they're talking about operation science. Or is that one way to word this correctly? They apply the same categories when they're talking about origin when they do operation science. They simply will not work. It's a lot of logical fallacy. And you talk about both of them, they're the same thing. Yeah. Because origins, by their very nature, are not operations. By their very nature. And there's one thing to talk about how a self operates. That does not say where it came from. Well, that's a very important point, is it not? Now, so creationism deals with origins, not operations. You got that? And so, listen to me, those strict creationists would never, it would be a logical fallacy for a creationist to lose interest in operation science. And they had creationists have been pioneers in operation science. Y'all see that? That is, creationists has definite, as you're going to say, creationism deals with origins. And creation, in other words, if you look at it simply logically, a creationist has just as much interest in operation science as a non-creationist. There is nothing in creationism that logically reduces interest in operation science. The quest for knowledge goes on. And the quest for details about origins even goes on. Y'all see that? There's nothing built into the idea of creation that in any way reduces interest in operation science. And scientists assume that's true because something could be false. And the fact that they are misunderstanding this reflected the fact that they would say, well, creationists will destroy modern science and such phenomena. All I'm saying is, it is historically false to say that, it's not really true, the other way around, and it is an error to say that because it fails to pretend it's an operation. Okay, any questions on that? Well, now we come to metaphysics and the origin of life. We have seen the demise of positivism. Quantum physics destroyed positivism. The idea that you can trace in simple and mechanical fashion everything to its roots and to its conclusion. Not true. Why? Because, as we've already talked about, quantum physics introduces the concept of uncertainty into it. Positivism is dead. Then we come to the myth of presuppositionless science. Because of relativity and quantum physics, even before that, there is no such thing as presupposition of science. That is, I don't mind the evolutionists telling me that I approach the subject with presupposition. I just don't want him telling me that he doesn't. You got that? I don't mind him telling me that I operate from a philosophy. He can tell me that all he wants to as a creationist. Because it's true. I just don't want him acting as if he doesn't operate from a presupposition, from a philosophy. Because it's impossible not to operate from a philosophy. You start with a presupposition. Otherwise, you could draw no hypotheses. You see, here's how this works. You see, here is the hypothetical deductive method. You know how this works. Hypothetical deductive method says it starts with here's your evidence, your line of evidence. And it starts with a hypothesis. And the hypothesis reflects a philosophy. That is, for instance, what we think, I'd say a hypothesis is, I think that X is true. But you see, if I think that X is true, therefore I think X is possible. I would not think it would be true if it's not possible. And what I think is possible is determined by my philosophy.
you get that.
That's what it's possible.
For instance, now, that is what is possible. Not what is plausible, but what is possible. Then I say, well, if X is true, then it predicts A, B, a hypothesis or a theory. We're going to, I think, it doesn't matter here. It predicts. You see, the validity of a theory depends upon its power to predict. Therefore, I say, this is a scientific method, I say that if X is true, then A, B, C, D, D, that is my limited evidence, I should find A, B, C, D, D. If a certain virus causes this disease, then I should find this, the blood should show this chemistry, and it should respond to this treatment, and so forth. And it should not respond to these other things. The ability of theory to predict. So that's the evidence. And here I work inductively from the evidence, and I find, lo and behold, A, the evidence. I look at the evidence, it might be paleontology, it might be experimental evidence, anything I can observe, okay? And I find B, okay, just fine. Then all of a sudden, I don't find C, I find Y. Uh-oh, there's a break. And I don't find D, I find R. And then I don't find E, I find F. Well, what happened was, it didn't work. So then what do I do? Well, then I move on to another hypothesis and a theory. And I make some predictions. I'll predict F, G, and H. And then I look at the evidence and see what I get. And I'll go on until it becomes law, becomes quote true or a fact, when what the theory predicts is what the evidence demonstrates. Now, can you understand that? And then if this doesn't work, then I move on to another one. Another hypothesis. Make my prediction. If this is true, I should find this. Look at the evidence, this is what we find. Okay? Now there's evidence, there could be all kinds of evidence, paleontology, mathematical, you know, probability, could be of any kind. This is not now. This is called the hypothetical deductive method. That is, the hypothetical deductive method is you draw a hypothesis, you deduce from the hypothesis what you should find, then you work inductively to see if you find it.
Hypothetical deductive.
Science uses a hypothetical, that's wrong, that's a hypothetical code. Hypothetical deductive or hypothetical dash deductive. Any questions on that? Can you understand that? Now, here we're talking about presupposition with science. You see, your presuppositions come operate here because your hypothesis will only manifest what you think is possible. If you do not think it's possible, you will not manifest it as a hypothesis. Now, the problem is where philosophy and bias and presuppositions come to bear is right here. Right here. That is your willingness to move on to another hypothesis when your hypothesis has failed to predict. And in the area that we're talking about, in creation versus evolution, the evolutionist does not think, many of them, scientism, not evolution, they think use the word correctly. Scientism, by its very nature, does not admit that. If this hypothesis is the supernatural, the supernatural creationism, you see, suppose you're a man, a scientist, whose philosophy says that this is possible, but this is not possible. That's your philosophy, your bias, your presupposition. Then, what you're going to do is you're not going to cross over this line. And at that point, you stop being a new scientist. And what you do is, you labor with C, D, and E, or ignorance, or however you do with it, play games with it, and try to say, well, really, it does, the evidence does fit the prediction. This is where, for instance, this is where Murray Eaton says, fellas, the evidence does not produce what these theories predict. And gradualism speaks. Neo-Darwinism predicted gradualism. What is the fossil evidence? Discontinuity, not gradualism. See what I'm saying? And the genetic, what we know about genetics says, not gradualism, discontinuity. So, what many are doing, like the authors of this book, they're moving over. They're saying, it did not predict the evidence, therefore, we're moving over. And my position is that the creation hypothesis predicts certain things, and while there are some problems with every view, what the creation hypothesis predicts is what you find. For instance, the creation hypothesis predicts discontinuity in the fossil record. What do you find? Discontinuity in the fossil record. The creation hypothesis predicts that there will be new information not possible through naturalistic genetics. What do you find in the biological order? New information not made possible by operation science. That is, there's nothing in the way that information is passed on that explains how you can have new information. Genetic information, DNA information. You understand that? So all I say is that the creationist hypothesis does a better job of predicting what you will find when you work inductively with the evidence. But here's the problem. Here's the thing. You see, if you will not cross over, there's no such thing as presupposition. This has a presupposition. This has a presupposition. You might think of both are possible, which is, you see, if you think that this is possible and this is impossible, then your bias, your presupposition, is going to keep you from the truth. Is that if, as a matter of fact, this is true? Now, you see, if you think that both is possible, then you simply go on what is the most plausible. And if there are problems in the connection between evidence, then sometimes you can't get at the evidence, or you don't know how to interpret the evidence, then you go with plausibility. And I think that the creation hypothesis, the creation model, as we say, the creation model is the most plausible. As do thousands and thousands of world best scientists. But you see, the thing that keeps scientism away from the truth, as we would say the truth, is their unwillingness to cross this line. What keeps them from crossing this line? Going on to the hypothesis is their presupposition. Does that help you? How to think about this? Now, listen to me, I realize a lot of details you already know about. I'm going to figure out how to teach you how to think about this. See, if you have a sometimes you can think something is simply impossible. But you can try to do in Birmingham, that route. You know, if you had come to me, I'd have left my house, or left my life, but that's not my will, if you made a mistake. It was my presupposition, it was my philosophy. And so I didn't even bother with that. I just jumped on a shelf or something. Send me your own bill or something like that. Well, they said, so a couple of days ago, they sent me back
photocopy of my receipt. There it was, my credit card number and my signature, $14 and a day. Well, that was impossible, and I fused Gene for 45 minutes, and then I decided to, I knew it was a waste of time, perfect waste of time. But I checked my receipt, and long ago, that's what I found. On the receipt, my signature, I'm pressing my signature on that page, and where I had it filed, it was the name was right there. So I bought a tank of gas at a Shell station for $14 that month. Then I was really busy. And then it took me 20 minutes to cross that line. I sat there and I fussed and I got my book out. I hate to show my new back where I was. It was during spring break. I'm from Bristol. I had a revival in Bristol, Florida. I knew how many times I spent the day. And I had not been gone from Birmingham. And it was a credit card, and nobody had a credit card but myself. My wife had not been up there with a credit card. It didn't make a difference for a second. I thought, well, my wife, both of them might feel like this, take a trip. I also walked along my credit card and get a credit card and feel like I remembered that my wife had been there either, or anybody else had been there. And this shows the mentality. It took me 20 or 30 minutes of looking at that receipt when my copy to accept the fact that I had signed that receipt that the bill was mine. That meant it had to be another solution. Then you know, I thought that the only thing was trying to figure out how I could have been in Bristol, Florida and Fort Wayne, Alabama in the same morning. And I did, what I'm saying is it took me up over an hour and a half to admit the possibility that there was my signature. I thought I was going crazy. Why? Because my presupposition was it could not have been mine. It was the hardest thing in the world to let go of that. When I finally, I figured it out, by the way, but I didn't figure it out. I didn't come to the truth. I didn't even come close to the truth until I finally said to myself, well, I'm going to figure this out. I've got to admit that that is my signature. So the receipt is my bill. I do sign it. Therefore, since I signed that, there has to be an explanation. Then, operating from the presupposition that it was my signature, for a long time, operating because it could not have been fine, because I could not have been there, and I've been expecting nothing really up there. Therefore, tell me, since I could not have been there, it could not be my bill. So, I could not really, I'm looking good eyes. Even though I had that in my hand, my copy, that I paid home in my bill folder and put it on file, it still was a long time before I could admit it was mine. So I put my mind in order that if I'm going to come to, I'm going to have to admit the obvious truth. This is the objective fact. That was that I did by at least my credit card receipt. That would be the end of it. I observed it very carefully, no question my signature, filed with the right name. Okay. Once I changed, crossed over the line, then it became I fought for an hour and a half. I fought the object of it. I looked at the sheet and I said, it cannot be mine, it cannot be true, blah, 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 blah. Once I crossed the line, I figured out that I knew. Now, you see, and this is what the evolutionist did. I put it as I can tell you this. Look at the evidence. And the evidence is very clear. And he stares at it, and he twists it, and he turns it, and he reminds why. So he can't quite make himself very often cross the line. And do not help. It might be true. This is I. That human mind is I. Took me so long. It's a commentary on your own prejudice, on your presupposition. Why should it take me over an hour to admit that was my purpose? And I had the irrational evidence left there in me. Because of my presupposition. Presupposition couldn't have been mine because I've never been employed in Alabama. That's how the human mind works. How do you understand it? That's a very good illustration of this. Well, this is the intellectual component involved.
Okay, so then to close, we look at the demise of college positivism and the myth of presupposition of science. The mind of scientism, I say, is often unable to recognize its own bias and then presupposition. They think they are nothing but objectivity and purity, inductive purity, and that creations have nothing but prejudices and biases. Well, I don't want to spend time on that. Did you understand the principle I was trying to teach you on this? Very basic. Look at metaphysical commitment versus reason. That is, the commitment to metaphysical naturalism has been defined from contradictory evidence. Creation is often manifest as similar mentality. You know, we admit that. Creation is often demonstrate that mentality. But here, where on this, where this statement that the commitment to metaphysical naturalism has been defined from contradictory evidence, where on my diagram here would that fit in? Oh, where is it illustrated? Right here. Where what is found does not meet what is predicted. And but the commitment to rather than crossover, you simply deny it or play games with it on giving the nonsense. That's where they say, at this point they say all kinds of dumb things like, well, give them enough time, anything can happen. My hypothesis didn't predict, but that doesn't make a difference, it's true anyway. Any questions on that? Special creation, and special creation is the other thing. Creationism offers the more reasonable explanation of the phenomenon. That is, here, creationism predicts better. And here, and I give you some examples here. An oxidizing early earth, that is, early earth contained oxygen and the point here is that chemical evolution would be impossible in an oxidizing earth. That is, oxygen, you know what rust is? That's oxidization, and it oxidizes. There's oxygen in a, unless there is a machine, a biological machine to counter it, oxygen oxidizes, it breaks down. That is, all this Miller Urey stuff, test tubes and the amino acids, that oxygen breaks down all those compounds. You understand? You're right, you got that from the reading vision. Now, oxygen, you should know that. But oxygen breaks down any kind of order or complexity that could have been produced. And so, And I said earlier, a short time between Earth's cooling and the appearance of light. And this is according to the author here. I'm not sure we would agree with all this, but the point is that the that even if you grant the evolutionist his time, he doesn't have enough time. The time gap between the cooling of the Earth, where life would have been possible, and the appearance of life is too short, even for its own mathematics. That's the point here. Understand that it's all the time between, it doesn't have enough time. Third, the absence of prebiotic soup, all these organic compounds floating around just waiting to get together and form a committee and call it a cell, that simply does not exist. There's no evidence whatever for a prebiotic soup. Then the problem that we've already talked about of information, and then the problem of complexity. You might have put in your notes versus order. Complexity. The oddity of scientism fails to distinguish between order and complexity.
That is, they'll boil the amino acids together, and because of what's called, because certain chemicals are naturally hydrophobic and others are hydrophilic, that is, some oppose, some react to water, some are attracted to water. Hydrophobic compounds are like, they react and turn away from water, line up away from water, and hydrophilic toward it. So if you get certain, you'll get certain orders, certain chemical compounds, but that is not the same thing as complexity. Normally, scientists confuse the speech of order as if it were complexity, and order is not complexity.
So the word here is complexity, the right word. These are, that is, on these things, you got this, A, B, C, D, and E, we would list them right here. That is, and the creation model fits better. For instance, creation explains how you could have life in an oxidizing atmosphere. Creationism explains why you do not need a lot of time. Creationism does not need the prebiotic soup, therefore the absence is no problem. Creationism provides the information. Creationism predicts information from the outside. And creationism, the creation model, predicts complexity. And the evolutionary model of chemical evolution answers none of those. It breaks down every point. Okay. Any questions on that? This is sort of bringing things to the close here. Well, we look at plausibility. Here's my word over here. Plausibility and creation. The principle of falsification does not apply to origin science. That is, that's what Popper, that the Karl Popper says in the Kuhn-Popper debate. Popper says that evolution can never be anything but a philosophy of biology because it is not subject to falsification. That is, at least prebiotic evolution is not subject to falsification. It cannot show that it could not have happened. Therefore, you cannot prove that it did happen scientifically. Going to be a philosophy, a biology. But note this, neither is creation, but listen to me, creationism is not falsifiable either. Is creation a scientific hypothesis? The answer is no, it is plausible, but it's not scientific. In the sense that, in the strict sense, you can make scientific arguments for it, but it is not, in the final analysis, a scientific hypothesis. Because neither is organic evolution. Why? Because you cannot go back and reproduce a process active only in the past. And by definition, with origin speaks of a process active only in the past. The origin of the universe only happened once, no matter how it happened. You cannot go back and see it. All you can show is what's like, what is plausible, the plausible explanation of what probably happened. And the creation model is the more possible. And by the way, Popper admits that. The plausibility of origin science is based on causality and uniformity. That is, what caused what we see what explains the uniformity of the natural order. Now, you see what I'm talking about here. The plausibility of operation of science does not depend only on causality and uniformity. Why? What is the plausibility of operation of science? What would you add to that? Not only causality and uniformity.
Operation of science can build on more, such as experience, demonstrability, reproducibility, you can, you know, observation. The origin of science, you cannot observe it, you cannot reproduce it. All you can do is posit the most plausible cause, the most plausible explanation for uniformity. In operation of science, you can measure, observe, demonstrate, reproduce. So it is origin science that is based only on the causality and the function by definition. Because you cannot reproduce it and observe it, that we cannot falsify it. Conclusion. The above discussion, this is the author's conclusion, is not meant as a scientific proof of a creator, but is merely a line of reason to show a special creation by a creator beyond the cosmos, number five up here, the special topic. It is merely a line of reason to show that special creation by a creator beyond the cosmos is a plausible view of origin science. That is simply saying we can cross this line. The line, there's nothing in science that says that we cannot cross that line.
Is this a quote from
the book? Yes. Okay. Any questions? Well, I'm finished. Turn your paper in for the book with me. I can help you. Then the seat, then the other.